Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I give it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
No, Sensei.
No mercy.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your Black Panther party.
Jake LaTondres.
I am bad news. I'm going to break you.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slice.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saved.
Well, that's it, boys. I've been redeemed. The preacher done washed away all my sins and transgressions.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, and on the other end of the line in the Duck South Studios with me tonight, Ramsey Russell, and, let me put that and in there, Forrest and Duncan Russell. Guys, how are y'all?
And we're doing good, Rocky, I tell you what. I got my two boys with me tonight, my two best hunting buddies. Have been hunting with me since they were 3 years old. And, it ain't no telling what they're going to say. The nut didn't fall far from the tree with them two boys, I tell you what. But I'm proud to have them on the show tonight.
Guys, how are y'all?
I can't complain. Can't complain.
You know, I got y'all here with me tonight. So if Ramsey gets to talking too much, just walk over in the other room and take the phone away from him.
No, that won't be a problem. Oh, yeah.
You know, growing up, and I've told Ramsey since we started this thing that I look forward to this particular episode. Growing up in the Russell household and growing up with Ramsey, watching from afar through the MS Duck system, you look up to somebody. But growing up in the same house, and I know you, don't get me wrong, I know you looked up to your dad, but man, watching him day in and day out with the get ducks, growing up, going hunting with him every day, that's got to be an interesting process.
No, there were definitely some ups and downs. I can promise you that.
All right, I got to ask, going back to that first episode, which one? It was Duncan that sold the turtles, right?
Yeah.
Yep, that was me.
You went to school and sold those turtles for how much? $5, Duncan?
$5 a piece. I caught them across the street in the pond from, by our house. I was saving up to buy a shotgun.
You know, most kids are saving up to buy a John Deere tractor or the newest video game. You're saving up to buy a gun. That would be about right.
Dad told me if I could meet him halfway, he'd buy me. He said he'd throw the other half in for whatever shotgun. So I saved up for probably 2.5 years and finally got $600 so I could buy the new Benelli M2.
He did it on a hot summer day. I'll never forget. He come in there and said, you know, could we go look at shotguns? So we kicked around, went and looked at a few shotguns and came home. And next thing I know, he walked out in the den and he had a wad of cash like a street dealer. And I'm like, where the heck did you get all that? You know, selling turtles, birthday money. So I got back up. We went and bought him a new M2.
One of the things that I hear Ramsey talk about a lot that I find real interesting is you guys grew up a lot. We're going to jump into y'all and your stories, but one of the things that I find interesting is growing up around MS Ducks because, you know, a lot of the guys from the old MS Duck site, you knew them by their screen name. Y'all, and that's what y'all called them. Called them Mark Wilson.
I still don't know Iron Grip's real name.
I don't either. I don't know Big Water's real name.
The old Duck South originated from the backstory on that. It originated from, of course, MSDucks.com from the old days, and Ramsey was a very big part of MS Ducks, and a lot of the members were around. And you know, I've always heard you say, Ramsey, that that Forrest and Duncan just knew him by their screen names from MS Ducks.
They did. Rocky, I'll just say this, 'cause I see a lot of conversations on the new Ducks out there on Facebook. Like Josh posted up a thread not too long ago about getting kids involved in the outdoors. And, you know, my philosophy has always been that kids spell love T-I-M-E. And, you know, I think your best hunting buddies are raised, not just made across the world. I think you raise them in your home. I think other podcasters have shared similar views. And so the minute my children could tug me on the shirt sleeve and say, "Dad, I got to go to the bathroom," instead of me having to change diapers, they ended up in the back seat or front seat of the truck, and off we went. And, you know, the old MS Ducks, and I think we're getting that way with the new Duck South, the old MS Ducks form, we had crawfish boils, we had teal hunt. We got a teal hunt been going on for 15 years or more now. You know, we hunted with a lot of different members. There were a lot of team groups, and my boys went on it all. I mean, you know, they were old enough to go, and as they grew into hunters and began shooting, they began shooting. You know, and it's so funny when I look back, and you mentioned that, how many friends off of MS Ducks, and I don't mean 5 or 10, I mean 50 or 100, have witnessed my boys in the field shooting doves, shooting their first limit, killing their first duck. Big Water took Duncan on his first, he got his first duck. Hunting in the Nissan Swamp with Big Water, and all these folks, you know, to this day, you know, my kids grew up as GetDucks.com was coming along as a business, going to conventions, going to shows. They were cheap labor, you know. I'd grab them up at 12 and 14 years old, and we'd go to the storage building, and they'd help me haul equipment off into my trailer to go to shows, and they're always around. And now that they've grown up, they're an integral part of my life, of course, but really they're kind of an integral part of my business life. You know, Forrest is all the time sending me memes and nice things to post up, you know, and Duncan's they both got real good eyes for what does well in social media. They're both very sociable, very, very sociable people. They make friends everywhere they go. But tonight is about them. And I'll just let y'all talk, and I'll kind of help steer it some, maybe.
Well, Duncan, let's start out with this. The trip to Argentina, because that was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I heard that turned out pretty interesting, Tina, for you. Y'all had a great time. You and the guide had a great time?
Oh, yeah. There were one or two really, really long nights and hard mornings, but it was a great time. I mean,
what did you enjoy most about it, Duncan?
I mean, really, I mean, there wasn't anything I didn't enjoy about it. Like, I remember the first morning, I was just trying to ask the guide if there were capybaras out there. So me and my buddy were trying to figure out how to say it in Spanish. And he just said, you know, muy grande nutria. And the guide started freaking out about nutrias. And then that afternoon, we were floating down a little creek/river in a fiberglass boat shooting nutrias. I mean, they'd do anything to make you happy.
That trip will be the one that I think, and I told your dad this, I think that trip will be the one that you remember the rest of your life, especially with the Marine Corps coming up here in the next week or two, shipping out to boot camp. That's going to be the one that sticks out the most. Well, let's begin here. Let's talk about some memorable hunts with your dad, because and before you start on one of those, I want to ask you a question. Does he really shoot first?
Oh, my. He tries to. You can't beat him to the Gulf. That's a fact. That's a fact.
I can't remember if it was Forrest and I talking about it a couple of weeks ago, or if it was Big Water this past weekend talking about how Ramsey's quick to the trigger.
Oh, it's the case for sure. There's no doubt about that.
He'll tell everybody to wait while they're sitting there surfing, and the next thing you know, he's up and shooting.
So he shoots them first pass. There's no doubt about that.
When they're killable, Dad's shooting them. He's not going to give them an extra pass if he can get them.
We had that talk last week. You give a duck an extra pass, you give him a chance to leave. Kill him when you can.
Yeah. I will say, he doesn't miss too often. When there's that high single gadwall circling at 40 yards, he just ups and shoots him. I mean, he's usually going to get him. So you can't be too hard on him for it.
And I'll say this, Rocky, if I'm hunting with them two youngins, if I do shoot first, which is not always the case hunting with them two boys, but if I do, I got two other people chiming in with me. So whoever shoots first, everybody shoots. Team Russell starts shooting. And but you know, you better be quick around these two boys now. They're quick as a snake.
Well, what are a couple of hunts that stand out to y'all the most in your mind?
Man, that's a tough one.
Probably the first one that I think of, and I've been talking to Dad about how this is going to be the first story I tell on here, but how old was I when that 4-10 incident happened? Four? It was before I killed my first duck. I must have been four.
Yeah, you'd have been five then, probably five. You shot your first duck right before your sixth birthday.
So I was five. Me and Dad went out to this pit trying to get my first duck, and I remember he borrowed a single shot 4-10 for me to use, and we were sitting there, and I think it was a gadwall came and landed right there in the decoys, and I was all excited, missed him. That was all right, you know, it's fine, we'll get the next one, and breaks the barrel, and it doesn't eject the shell out. And he starts picking at it with his knife, couldn't get it. He said, all right, wait here, walks to the woods, cut a switch, comes back and tries to ram it out, and then he gets the switch stuck down in the barrel. And now he's starting to get a little bit heated. Walks all the way back to the truck and gets one of the little multi-tools. And he's sitting here pulling and pulling and pulling, trying to get it out. And it slipped off, and he punched himself right in the nose, starts gushing blood, picks up the gun. He's like, all right, come on, we're leaving. Just left right there, pouring blood all over his face. I don't know. I thought that was the funniest thing.
The thing we do for our son's ducks, Rocky.
Oh, to me, the most – is the last youth weekend that I had. And I mean, it was a pretty slow duck season all year long. And then right there, the week after duck season closed, and it's youth weekend, there's ducks on every single piece of water at Willowbrae. And I shot a pintail, four greenheads, and a drake gadwall sitting right there on the backside of our fishing lake at my deer camp in about probably 10 minutes as soon as shooting light started.
That was a memorable hunt, Duncan. I tell you, Rocky, that was a tough season. And the minute the regular season ended, the ducks just moved into the South Delta. And we got this one little hole called Ramsey's Hole right there next to Camp House. Nobody ever hunts it. And we went out there, and it was just loaded with mallards. And Duncan and I went and sat up. He was shooting. It was just me, him, and Cooper, my dog Cooper. And he picked his greenhead limit, and he shot a wood duck. And there was enough pintails, just a few of them, floating around that we decided to wait it out until he got that pintail. And that was a heck of a memorable hunt. You know, there's so many you forget about. One hunt I remember.
You know, Duncan, talking about these adventures down at Willow Break, tell me about the grasshopper. I've heard a little bit about this story.
All right. So, I mean, I was probably 5 or 6 years old, just like a little kid. Dad gets on the mule and starts driving. I was sitting in the passenger seat, and I had caught this huge grasshopper. I'm talking about it was just massive. And I noticed it was like trying to – it looked like it was trying to bite me. I was like, man, I wonder – I never thought of a grasshopper, you know, biting you. So Dad's just sitting there minding his own business and just looking out the road in a great mood. And I just kind of eases over there and let it bite him on his forearm. And he hollered, and it drew blood. And he started screaming, thought that there was a wasp nest in the mule or something, and hopped out whenever he found out that it was me that stuck a grasshopper up to him. It was not good.
Rocky, everybody, you know, look, growing up with two Russell boys was, you know, I mean, the nut didn't fall far from a tree. I'll say it. They got a lot of the daddy into them. There's no denying. But everybody talks about Duncan going to boot camp and them drill sergeants yelling and being hard on him. I'm like, Duncan's been training for this his whole life. He those drill sergeants ain't got nothing on his own daddy.
Well, who is the prankster in the family? I didn't ask that earlier.
I'm probably gonna have to say it's me. I mean, whenever I went to Argentina, I got this alarm clock in my room, and I mean, it's kind of been a growing feud this summer of my alarm going off at 5 o'clock and not waking me up, but waking my brother up who lives right down the hall. But I kind of purposely set it
every morning.
I kind of purposely set it full blast at 5 o'clock before I left for Argentina.
I didn't hear that story.
This has been going on all year. Every morning, weekends, holidays, it doesn't matter. At 5 o'clock, that alarm's going off and not waking up anybody but me.
The great thing about having this podcast tonight is you know, Forrest has been at college. He's going his junior year in college. Duncan just graduated high school. Parker is a senior, or going into her junior year, I should say. And, you know, it's been the last summer. It's been a wonderful summer because all three of my kids have been back home this summer. They've been working during the day, but they've been home. And for as much of the summer I was here, I was gone a lot working, but it's been wonderful to have all three of my kids back in the home. And, you know, truth of the matter is, with them two doing what they do for a living, my yard has never looked better either. You know, they've kept my yard nice and clean, my bushes cut. So, but it's been kind of a monumental, real pivotal summer in our household because now Forrest going back to Mississippi State and Duncan joined the Marines.
Man,
I'll tell you this. Talking about, you know, if you take kids duck hunting, kids get wet and kids get cold. And that's just, you know, that's just how it is. I never forget Forrest was about 5 years old. And, you know, the way we hunt, even now at Willowbrook, I love to hunt kind of raw. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we got a few blinds, but we hunt in the bushes. We hunt in natural cover. You know, we go where the ducks are exactly and just kind of set up. And so, you know, getting decoys together and blinds together and dogs loaded up, you know, it's a little bit of an ordeal in the process just to get things ready in the morning in a hurry. And one of Forrest's first duck hunts that I can recall, he couldn't have been 4 or 5 years old. We go to Willowbrook at the bunkhouse, and I lay out everything that child has to wear right up to his waist. So from the left, I'm like, put on this layer and this layer and this layer and this layer, and then put on your waders. Yes, sir. And, well, that morning, you know, I got up, and before I even got the coffee fixed, he was dressed and ready to roll. I'm like, boy, am I proud of that kid. So I load the four-wheeler, and off we go, and it's not particularly cold. It's probably 45, 50 degrees, and we're sitting on our little chairs, you know, and we're hunting. I got a buddy there from College Gesco hunting with me, and about mid-morning, by 9 o'clock, Forrest's lips are blue, his teeth are chattering, he's cold. I'm like, son, you can't possibly be cold with all those clothes I laid out. I mean, you ought to be sweating. Well, he was cold. And we get back to the camp house. He undresses, and all he's done, he had stepped out of bed with his tidy whities on, put on a sweatshirt, stepped into his waders, and put his coat on. And all them warm layers I had laid out were still sitting on the bed, and I hadn't even noticed. And that's a pretty endearing moment for me, you know. Went straight from his underwear, his Spider-Man underwear, into the waders.
Oh, me. Well, we definitely got an inside look at the Russell family tonight.
Oh, yeah. Years ago, Duncan couldn't have been more than 8, maybe 9. We showed up to camp. We'd been gone for a week or so. It was back when we were hunting up in Arkansas, too. And we showed up, and the report was that everybody was signed out deer hunting. There were no ducks on camp, they said. None. There were no ducks. Well, Duncan and I had gone out about a month previous and had a heck of a shoot in this little hole we call Pintail. We had taken turns shooting. We had set up in that particular hole. There's a kind of an open area in the center, and there's a blind on the south end of it. There was a hard north wind, and we had set up, and as the duck would kind of come over and bank into the wind to work those decoys, we shoot them when they banked. We took turns shooting. We had a great shoot. And there were zero ducks, according to the scout report. And when we walked into that duck hole, 12 mallards got out. 12 milers. That was it. It was cold. It was threatening snow. And we got up along that big patch of coffee weed. We brought a couple of dove stools to sit on. And instead of setting up a real classical pattern, we stretched 9 decoys for about 40 yards along the edge of those coffee weeds. And then we got inside of it. And when the ducks would start trickling back, all 12, 13 ducks would come in pairs, setting back up. And we would kind of stomp our feet a little bit and quack to them softly. And they would set up right over us. And it was cold, Rocky. We were sitting in water, you know, our butts were covered in water. It was cold. It was miserable. And it was starting to snow. And when we left that day in a camp that had 0 ducks in it, Duncan and I both had our matter limits that we earned ourselves. And that's one hunt that really sticks out for me and Duncan.
I'm sure that you guys have gotten to see parts of the U.S. and, good grief, out of the country that a lot of people don't get to see. What are some interesting places that you traveled with your dad and hunted?
The first limit I ever shot, I was in second grade, and I believe it was my first trip I ever traveled out of state. Me and Dad went out to the panhandle of Texas, and I killed my limit of sandhills. And that same year, we went up to Ohio, and I killed my first banded goose. Those two stick out to me. I mean, that was, 15 years ago? No.
That's been a while ago, Mark. It sure has. You know, you know, my granddaddy always said, Rocky, that to train dogs, you got to be smarter than they are. Okay, and I learned a lot raising these two youngins. Many of the time, you know, remember those little bracelets people wore? WWJD. What would Jesus do? Countless are the times I've asked myself, what would Andy do? What would Andy Griffith do if this was an Opie case? You know, I'm playing. You struggle with this, but on that Sandhill Crane Hunt, Forrest is talking about, a buddy of mine had called and invited me to bring him out there. He was 8 years old, and shoot sandhill cranes. I said, man, come on, dude. Those sandhills are tall and tough, and, you know, he just shoots a little 20 gauge. He said, no, this is opening day. I got a great spot. These birds are going to decoy right in the pocket, and they did. And we shot, you know, Forrest, his first limit of decoying anything on his own unassisted was decoying sandhill cranes with 20 gauge and steel fours. He just whacked them. Well, later that day, we were jump shooting tanks, and just these little cattle tanks back up around the levee and shooting. It was windy. My Lord, was it windy. And I never will forget, we walked and jumped this tank and shot a few birds, and the birds started rallying. And about this time, here comes a green-winged teal flying Mach 3 with a tailwind. I'm going to say I got about a box car in front of that bird when I pulled the trigger and it failed. And Forrest says, I got him. And you know, I said, well, how far did you lead that bird, son? You know what his answer was? Same amount as you did. And I guess he did get him then, you know.
Yep.
You gotta be smarter than them to train them, you know. They've been some good hunting buddies. Countless of the times, you know, at Willowbrake, which is not easy hunting. Willowbrake is not easy hunting. It's one of those kind of places you've got to play by the rules. You've got to hide. You've got to call when it's time to call or not. You've got to do everything perfect. You've got to honor the sport. You've got to respect the ducks. You've got to play by the rules to get any ducks whatsoever. And most importantly, you got to be able to shoot. And I guess if they say I shoot first, maybe I do. But I know that having those two boys with me, We do our fair share of limit bringing in right there at Willowbrake because they know how to hunt, they know how to set decoys, and by God, they know how to shoot when the birds finally cooperate. You know, so we mark our fair share on the scoreboard there at Willowbrake.
We've got the easy part out of the way, and Ramsey, I know you may not want to comment on this, but I want to ask Forrest and Duncan this. When we first started off in this story, we talked about you growing up, how you got into hunting, eased into it, and then we got to the story of being burnt. There were parts that you told me that that Forrest and Duncan really didn't even know. And that probably you talked some about it, but not in detail as you probably did in that podcast. Duncan Forrest, is there, were you kind of shocked, or did you know all of the details that we talked about in those podcast episodes?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them we had never even heard. I mean, he'd gone, told us the basics, like, yeah, you know, I was cleaning paintbrushes and it ignited, but I mean, told us about how long he was in the burn center and all, but he never really got into detail with anybody that I know of like that. So, I mean, a lot of that we heard was kind of the first time we'd ever heard a lot of it.
I mean, from the number of people that I've heard from about that episode, I mean, it just, you know, growing up with him as your dad, you know your dad's been burnt, but it just wasn't talked about a lot.
Yeah, that was, most of that stuff was definitely new to me, too.
Well,
I will say this, though. One of my favorite quotes I've ever heard is Dad used to tell me and Forrest this all the time growing up, anytime something hard happened. He'd always say, everybody has their burn center in their life, and there's only victims and survivors. So you can either man up and deal with it, or you complain about it and be a victim.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely had a lot of life lessons come out of that, for sure.
Well, it's an unbelievable story to become who Ramsey's become today going through that. Now, I just wanted to ask you guys that. I'm sorry to go from hunting to jumping into that, but I just wanted to, your initial reaction when you did hear those episodes.
Oh, I know. I couldn't hardly believe it. I mean, it was about hard to listen to.
Yeah, about the same way for me.
I got a text message from them that really kind of summed it up, though. You know, they had not heard it. And as much as I tried to be a good daddy in a lot of different ways, taking time with them, teaching them, you know, raising around hunting camps and around a lot of folks, you know, at hunting camps, you know, they grew up in a hunting camp environment around the world everywhere. I mean, really, those boys have been to Mexico, Argentina, throughout the U.S. You know, there were probably other ways that I always felt like I may have slacked off, you know, like if they scraped their knee, I just brushed off and say, that's all right, boy. You know, I really wasn't all emotional about that kind of stuff. If they got hurt a little bit or something like that, I just, you know, I know watching them play sports, because I did not play a lot of sports after I got hurt. I just kind of, you know, was out of that whole loop. But the whole thing, like in football, gain that next inch. You know, I really was keen on them doing their very best at everything they did, because hard times are not unique to my childhood. It's everybody. We all face very challenging times, and it was just very important to me that my kids be able to shake it off and just man up and get that next inch in life. You know, and I'm very proud. I can't tell you how proud I am of these two boys. They right now they're 18 and 20 years old. They've chosen different paths in life, but way more than I did, way more than a lot of people their age, or way more than a lot of people I know that were their age. Right now, they got a game plan, and I couldn't be prouder, you know. So, but just getting the text message and hearing what they had to say about those podcasts really meant a lot to me. You know, I realized I'd kind of hit it. Now, Rocky, let me tell you, growing up traveling around the world and doing that kind of stuff, and I always wondered how it affects my kid. And I may have been a grown man before I jumped in the truck and drove halfway across the United States, but Forrest, for example, you know, graduates high school at 17 years old, and 5 hours later, maybe 5 hours later.
I hadn't even graduated yet.
He hadn't even graduated.
See, the funny part about that story is we've been scheduled to leave a week earlier, and then we had the snake incident that you were the mastermind behind, and they kept me in school a week longer. We had to wait till they let me out of the detention after all the other seniors were out to go. But we loaded up, went up there.
That's a long, convoluted story there. But we started off talking about Forrest right around graduation, or not even graduated yet. Him and two of his little buddies jumped into a pickup truck in Brandon, Mississippi, drove straight through the night, and landed in central Kansas on a freelance turkey hunt. Three 17-year-old kids. Now, this is what, the second or third year they've done it, third year, fourth year, they've met people. And, you know, that makes me very proud that they got the, you know, the umps to go and just put something together like that. The snake incident he's talking about, I have just a vague recollection. I had nothing to do with it. But Forrest decided on his senior prank at school that it'd be funny to turn a croaker sack full of snakes loose. And
oh, my gosh.
In the middle of school. And, I mean, I got to admit, that was a pretty, pretty fun practical joke. But I never will forget getting summoned by the headmaster at that school. He called me. Mr. Russell, I need to see you. Well, I knew vaguely that this thing was going to happen. How could I not know? But you know, well, I got something to do. I got work. He said, no, I need to see you now. And when I hung up, my wife said, what was that about? I said, it was like getting summoned to the principal's office. I mean, I haven't been called to the principal's office in 30-something years, but I think I'm in trouble. And so I go down there, and I meet the headmaster, and, man, he's dead serious, Rocky. I mean, this man is serious. And he come into my office, please, and shuts the door. But he needs my help. But he said, because he kept talking about the Russell boys, not Forrest, the senior, who had instigated the prank, but the Russell boys. And finally I said, well, wait a minute. Well, you're saying boys is in plural. Well, you know, right about the minute the pandemonium had started to cease and, you know, the snakes were crawled and the crowd was at bay, Duncan, who ain't a senior, walks into it, picks up a snake, and throws it onto the crowd. And the whole thing falls apart again. My daughter is all, you know, she knows about it because she's five halls over. And she said, you know, when we heard the pandemonium, I'd always wondered what it sounded like if there was a school shooting with the pandemonium. He said, that's exactly what it sounded like. The teacher didn't know what was going on, so she locked the door and pulled the shades down. A croaker sack full of snakes crawling everywhere all over that school. And the reason the principal called me to the office, we said, you know, it's funny. I get it. It's funny. But I'm scared if anybody tries to top that stunt, somebody will really get hurt. So I need your help to go along with, you know, this quote punishment, unquote. So that's the whole story that delayed them going on the turkey hunt by a week.
Good night. I think one of the coolest things about y'all that y'all picked up from your dad that I've noticed is the entrepreneurial spirit. We've talked about Duncan and the turtles. I mean, Forrest, you were mounting ducks when you were 10 years old, right?
Oh, yeah, I was in fourth grade the first time I went up to Mr. Pat's house.
I mean, you mounted a ton of ducks for a lot of different people.
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of summers up there with Mr. Pat, like his third son.
Yeah. And now you've gone on to start up. I mean, you have your own lawn business. Is that correct? And you're majoring in landscape architecture at Mississippi State.
Yes, sir. The lawn business, like, we had to let a lot of people go. You know, being up in Starkville, don't have time. And now Duncan's leaving, so he can't hold on to it anymore. So the lawn business dwindled down a little bit, but we still have a few yards we're keeping up.
Well,
both those boys this summer would go to full-time jobs. They'd leave here, leave the house. I think Forrest was leaving at 5:45 in the morning, and Duncan was leaving at 5:30. And then when they got off their regular jobs, they came home, regrouped for about 2 minutes, and went and mowed grass till dark. You know, it's kind of rare in this day and age to find kids that are willing and able to work like that.
Well, they had a great entrepreneurial example set for them.
Well, that and I made them put skin in the game. You know, I had a strategy back when they were little boys, and here's the deal. I got all the ammo you need and want. I got all the dove shells. I've got steel shot. Man, I've got cases. I've got pallets full of cases stashed of ammo. But the deal was they had to buy the first case, and they had to spend their money and buy the first case of ammo. And that's when we went from them shooting, you know, shelling out on doves at 70 yards to them picking their shots. It was when they were shooting their own ammo. And then when that ammo ran out, they started shooting mine, but the habit kind of persisted of them picking their shots and making their shots count, you see. And that really worked out great. You know, we were talking about what some of the stories growing up get ducks with them. And I'll tell you the story. I was in Russia back in, 2010 or 11. And went over there to scout, shoot capercaillie and hunt ducks. And I got placed with a group from Malta. Malta is a little island, 24 miles by 7 miles in the middle of the Mediterranean Ocean. And who would have believed it? I mean, it's 90 degrees in January in Malta, but who would have believed it? The national pastime is bird collecting. They were some of the most ardent bird collectors. One of them had over 850 species in his collection, and they wanted to go king eider hunting. Nobody in Malta, in all those bird collections, nobody had a king eider that they had killed themselves, so they booked a trip. As we started talking and helping them prepare for this trip, they wanted to come to Mississippi, you know, to get some gear, because it's very cold in St. Paul Island compared to Malta. Well, I was going to be gone to convention, so I said, yeah, y'all come on in, and we'll get you a hotel room. And my son Forrest has just got his driver's license, and he and Duncan will pick you up at the airport, and they'll take you to restaurants, they'll tour you around. I think they went to the Natural History Museum. But it was a very, very cultural experience for these two boys, and I hope they can tell you in detail some of the events that happened, because the Maltans came in for a week, then they went king eider hunting and almost died in that cold weather. Then they came back for a week because second only to a king eider, they both wanted a wood duck. Well, how hard can it be
to get a wood duck? And a hooded merganser.
And a hooded merganser. So y'all tell them about that, boys.
Oh, my favorite story from them, we took them to like a barbecue restaurant in town called Sonny's. And, they don't sell liquor in Brandon, Mississippi. So we go walking in there, and they both sit down. And, you know, me and Forrest ordered sweet tea, and the lady asked them what they wanted, and the first one goes, "Oh, I'd like wine, please." And she was like, "Wine?" And he was like, "Yes, red wine." It was so funny. We started cracking up laughing.
They just didn't get the concept of you can't buy wine at the little barbecue restaurant. But then, that was awesome. When they hit the timing about perfect when they came to our camp. I mean, it was, golly, a big cold front rolled in, and I can't remember ever shooting mallards like we did when they were there. I mean, it was just 10 yards on the deck picking out greenheads, like unreal.
And they wouldn't
care anything about the mallards.
They just wanted a hooded merganser.
I mean, they cared nothing about shooting a mallard, nothing about a gadwall, nothing about teal. All they wanted was wood ducks and mergansers. And last afternoon, they were – go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you didn't have a problem with helping them out then.
Oh, no. But I thought the last afternoon they were there, it was the last day of season, and Duncan brought one of them out to a hole, and I brought the other one out. And he just kept going, merganser, merganser, merganser. You know, you think we might get one? I was like, man, I mean, you know, I see them in here a good bit, but I mean, I really don't know. I mean, they don't decoy really. They just kind of, we might catch one flying through here. Now, we'd been there 30 minutes, and I see a pair of them come streaking down the break. I was like, get ready, this is mergansers. And man, this guy gets so excited. I mean, this is a grown, he's what, 50, 60 years old. I mean, he starts shaking just about watching these two birds come by. And they were pretty high, you know, I mean, they were probably 40 yards, these guys were phenomenal shots. And this dude just gets so excited and just shoots him right in the ass three times. And I mean, he was almost in tears when that bird kept flying. And he was just couldn't get over that. He finally had his chance and missed them. And he asked me, "Are you sure those were mergans?" I was like, "Man, I mean, I guarantee they were." And right about 5 minutes, I mean, at the same time, we were just covered up in teal and mallards and gadwall. Didn't even pay attention to him. He was just watching the skies for another merganser. And right, probably 5 minutes before shooting light ends, a single drake comes and lands probably 70 yards out there on the water. And I was like, dude, there he is, man. That's a merganser. And I go ahead and shoot him. He was like, no, you shoot with me so we make sure we get him. And I was like, no, man, go ahead and kill him. We just sat there arguing. And finally, we both counted three and both shot and just one lucky BB right in the head. And I mean, he started jumping up and down, hollering, hugging me in the blind. And I figured we'd go out there, and I didn't have a dog at that point. And I figured we'd, you know, wait till the end of the hunt and we had all our birds and we'd go pick up the ones, the decoy. And he was, no,
I had to go right then and go pick up that bird. And I ran out there and grabbed him. I mean, he was sitting there just holding it like it was a newborn baby. Like, he'd never seen anything like it. Gave me $100 just for that one bird. Shot at 2 mergansers all day and gave me $100 for it. He couldn't be more happy or proud.
A hooded merganser. But now, let me tell you the rest of the story, Rocky. They were hunting right behind camp in the afternoons. We can shoot during, you know, in the last week of season, we can shoot afternoons. Rest of the year, we get out of the duck holes by 11 or 12 at the latest. And I had told the two boys, I said, look, shooting time ends at blankety blank time. Yes, sir. Do not shoot after this time. Yes, sir. So I figured they'd take the two Maltons hunting, and I'd just sweep and clean up and shut down camp, you know, because this was it, last day of season. And I'm sitting there relaxed, and I hear a big volley go off, and I look at my watch. It's about a minute and a half to go, and I say, hey, y'all chill out now. Y'all ought to be picking up and be ready to come. Yes, sir. Shooting time came, and I hear a big volley. I send them a text in all caps, hey, y'all quit shooting. It's time to come on. And I hear another big volley. Now it's past shooting time. I'm like, hey, guys, y'all need to be getting out of there. This is past shooting time, you know. And about that time, my dear friend Ian Munn, Mr. Ian, the boys call him. He's down at the wash rack, and he texts me, the game warden's here. Well, sure he is, Ian. I guess you just messing with me because my kids are out there with some Malton shooting late. But I can't, the curiosity killed the cat, so I go down there. And sure enough, there's the state game warden, and we're talking. Well, I'm there, and Ian's there, and we're the only two duck hunters he knows at camp, really. And I'm doing the math in my head, and I'm thinking, well, kids are both youths. Forrest was 15, Duncan was 13, and technically, if they get in trouble, whoever the adult is gets the ticket. So I'm thinking, well, heck, I'm clear. And about that time, the game warden said something. I said, no, you know, no. And about that time, boom, 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 just a big volley goes off across the lake. I didn't hear nothing. And you believe he drove off, and about 5 minutes after he was gone, they come in with their limits of ducks and the hooded merganser and some wood ducks. But I was sweating bullets there for a minute. But I said, well, you know, I told him to quit at what time to quit. But man, look, these Maltese, they hunt.
I will say that was Duncan. That was Duncan and Dick Moss.
That was definitely me.
We were picking up decoys, and they came walking in and were standing in our hole still shooting.
So, man.
Well, you know, it's been a we obey the rule now. You know, one other thing that my kids find probably strange compared to hunting with a lot of their contemporaries is, you know, Rocky, we've talked about this before. There's rules to duck hunting. Some of them don't make no sense. Three of us go to duck blind. We shoot 18 ducks. We bring them all out. You know, it makes perfect sense to me, but that ain't the way the letter of the law goes. So, you know, at our camp, my two boys grew up. They bring their ducks out with a strap with their name on it, and I bring mine out. That's just the way we roll. You know, it's just we got to be that way. You know, I feel like, because we do this for a living, I feel like we're held to a higher standard, you know, and that's just some of the little nuances, you know, of that we have to go through. I mean, you know, we don't put 18 ducks on a strap and bring them out. Forrest carries his 6, Duncan carries his 6, I carry my 6. And we generally know who shot it. Hey, I just thought of this favorite hunt. I never will forget one time we went to this duck hole. You know, think about raising kids. You look at this picture, there's a daddy and two smiling boys, and everybody looks happy, and the world looks great. But remember I was talking about that Disney picture on Facebook at time, Rocky? You know that right before that picture was taken, everybody was yelling at each other. Well, what I noticed about my two kids is when they were growing up, one of them was always in a good mood, and the other one wasn't. I mean, one of them was in a good mood, but it's rare that both of them were. They woke up funny or something like that. So we all go till hunting. We sit out there for 2 or 3 hours in September. Don't fire a shot. Horse, man, guns hanging up and things ain't happening right, you know, whatever. And about that time, we're ready to leave. We're unloaded, and a flock of about 30 blue wings comes right into the duck hole. Well, man, we're trying to get in there. They're circling and they're coming back. We're trying to throw, me and Duncan are trying to load her up, boy. And right when that blue wing teal flock hits the decoys and bounces straight up. Me and Duncan are still loading guns, and Forrest throws in one shell, pulls the trigger, and shoots his limit in blue wing. Boom, one shot, kills his limit. Now, Duncan's in a bad mood, and Forrest is in a good mood. But that was a pretty memorable hunt for me.
Yeah,
we didn't shoot
great
before blue wing, but that was a very memorable hunt.
I'm sure that y'all spend, with dove season coming up, Forrest and Duncan, I'm sure both of y'all spend a lot of time in the dove field. And I actually got to hunt with y'all two or three years ago on my field, opening morning. So, but is that where y'all started off?
We spend a lot of time out in the dove field, especially when we were younger. Well, we don't miss opening weekend, but shoot, we don't go near like we did 7 or 8 years ago.
We used to go a lot, Rocky. We don't go quite that much anymore, you know. But we'll try to go 2 out of 3 mornings or 2 out of 3 days, if not all 3 days. And there were times we might go the first 4 or 5 days. You know, this day and age in the South, and I've said this before, I was 15 years old maybe before I realized that Labor Day weekend was a national holiday. I thought it was just the Monday we got out of school to go dove hunting when I grew up. And I loved to duck hunt. Y'all know that, but I guess just the way I grew up with my granddaddy, and that was my early days. If I had a Last Supper hunt, it would be opening day of dove season with my two boys on a field. You know, we always, you know, they grew up as little dove fetchers when they were too young to shoot, and that's how they learned to shoot with dove. You know, within a dove field, and that's always been a big thing for us is you know. Going to Little League Baseball, Forrest used to play select ball, and it was crazy to me. The coach looked at it like a free practice day. It was Labor Day, and that was a free practice day for him, or a free practice weekend, and I'd have to go to him and say, we won't be there. We're gonna be dove hunting. And he was the only one on his team that dove hunted. But, you know, for his whole life, he's been on a dove field opening day, and Duncan too. If Duncan ends up going to the Marines this weekend, it sounds imminent. This will be the first time, probably as long as he can remember, that he hadn't been on a dove field opening day. And I'm proud to say many of the dove fields around the Delta that once these boys got in that 12 to 13, 14-year-old age, there have been many a dove field that they're one of the first people off the field with their limits.
I can believe that. Well, look, before we leave this, I want to ask y'all this. I had a lot of friends growing up. And what was the difference that you saw having your dad in him from your other friends' dads? I mean, I know that's a difficult question, and it's kind of thrown on you, but...
And I'll say this. All the friends got spanking. But my friends who were here whenever we were young can testify that nobody's ever seen an ass whooping like we got whenever we were young. I'm talking about swinging a belt like it was a nunchuck. There wasn't any going for just the butt. It's wherever the belt hit.
He ran as fast as he could until he got out of breath from swinging. He kept it straight.
I'm sure if you had free time, you weren't sitting around the TV playing video games. He had you doing something.
Oh no! Actually, one of the worst whippings I can remember was one of the very few times that me and Forrest were playing video games. Dad in the house, we got into a fight, and you know he came in there and said, "Don't do it again." 30 seconds later, we got in another fight, and he came in there and said, "Don't do it again." And the third time he came in there, he was swinging that belt faster than I'd ever seen it. And we were scooting across the ground trying to get away from him. Oh, man, it was all hell broke loose.
The funny thing about that story, Rocky, we had some neighbors. And I guess I never saw a little wheel sitting in between my two sons when that belt come off. And, you know, I didn't abuse my kids, but I disciplined them. Just the way I was disciplined, with a good old-fashioned spanking. But, you know, my kids didn't take it personal. You know, they cried a little bit, and we went and hugged and made up, and then things were good again. Well, I remember coming back there to talk to them after that spanking, and I walked back in the den, and my wife is holding the next-door neighbor, the little boy from next door. Well, he'd never seen a good old-fashioned belt come off and lay on somebody like it. Well, she looked at me and said, "Here, you calm him down." Well, he had when the belt come off, he had hit my front door without opening it. He tried to run right through it and bounced off into the foyer and was crying. And so, you know, I calmed him down, and it was all good and fun. Well, the next night he comes over to eat dinner, and we're all laughing and cutting up at the dinner table until Duncan goes, my daddy says he's going to whip you. Well, the little kid starts to cry. And so, you know, for years after that, now look, this is a big old boy. Now, this guy is as big as you are, Rocky, a star quarterback from Brandon, Mississippi. Now, he's a big old boy, but then he was just a little boy. He'd never seen a whipping like it. But the funny thing is, they'd come to our backyard to jump on the trampoline, and Mama would call him and say, y'all come home. Well, those kids would keep bouncing on the trampoline. You know what they say to get him home? Mr. Ramby just pulled up. Boom, he was off that trampoline over the fence and back in his house. That's how his parents called him home, by saying Mr. Ramby had come home.
Dad's got a paddle in his office. I call it a paddle, but it's really just a plank of wood with a handle cut in it. And it's got the Rainmaker written on it in Sharpie. And he, every time he pulled it down, he'd say, it sounds like thunder and feels like lightning.
The one thing I can say about both of y'all, being around y'all some, is very respectful. And I know that was taught by your mom and dad. Both very, very respectful.
They are, Rocky. You know, we went up to Boston and hunted with an old Sea Duck captain we used to represent. We work for somebody else now because he's since retired. A couple of years ago, we go to Boston for the summertime. We eat lobster every day, and oysters we found out were good up there this time of year. And we was in a restaurant one night, and the couple, you know, the captain and his wife were older. And, of course, they're from Boston, Massachusetts, so they don't think like we do down here in the South. And every time Miss Barbara would say something, Dunk would say, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. And she kept saying, don't call me ma'am. And I was sitting there just eating at the table something, and finally she got serious, and she put her hand on Dunk and said, you don't call me ma'am. And that's when I interjected, wait a minute, Barbara. This ain't about your age. It's about respect, because down the South, we teach children to respect others. Because if they don't respect others, they can never respect themselves. And she got it. She goes, well, I never thought about it that way, you know. And then she come around. Well, about that time, this sassy barmaid comes up to take an order and says something to Duncan. And Duncan goes, ma'am. And the girl goes, I ain't no ma'am. And Barbara goes, you sure are. I think there's a lot. You know, I think the South really does have a lot of redeeming qualities. You know, I never really understood friends of mine, sons from other parts of the world, you know, other parts of the country that would call me by my first name. That just made me uncomfortable for a 12-year-old from Ohio or something to say Ramsey instead of Mr. Ramsey. You know, I think it's incumbent on all parents. And I think we in the South, you know, abide it by teaching our children to respect others so that they can respect themselves.
I would agree with that. Well, guys, I've enjoyed it. Duncan, man, thank you for serving our country. Thank you for the sacrifice that you're making, because you could be heading out and going to college and being a wild man, but no, you're choosing to serve and protect our country, and I appreciate that.
Oh, no, I ain't done nothing yet. I ain't been to boot camp yet.
But you're about to.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I've really enjoyed it. Forrest, Duncan, thank you for being here. Ramsey, thank you for being here again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckTales.com.